Happy New Year. That's new fiscal year for state of Wisconsin. Actually, today marks a new biennium. That's a word we pretty much only use to describe the state's budget process, which means it's setting up a spending plan for the next 2 years. The legislature last week passed the budget bill just in the nick of time. Governor Tony Evers has this week to decide whether he'll sign it into law, veto it entirely, or veto parts of it. We'll talk about the budget process, including provisions that made it and those that didn't this hour. We'll ask what it all means for those of us here in western Wisconsin as well. It's our legislative update on the West Side. I'm Dean Kallenbach. And our guests today are State Representative Rob Summerfield and State Senator Patty Schachner. Representative Summerfield is a Republican who represents the 67th Assembly District. That includes most of Chippewa County and eastern Dunn County. Representative Summerfield, good to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
And Senator Schachner is a Democrat who represents the 10th Senate District, which includes most of St. Croix and Polk counties, as well as portions of Dunn, Pierce, and Burnett counties. Senator Schachner, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you for having me also.
As always, we welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions. Call 800-228-5615 to join the conversation. That's 800-228-5615. And as we begin the conversation, a point of disclosure, as an employee of Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm also an employee of the University of Wisconsin, and so my job and my organization is affected by the budget we'll be discussing. So you both voted with your party on the budget that eventually passed last week and is now in the governor's hands. We'll get to some item-by-item specifics of the budget as our conversation continues, but I'm wondering why both of you voted the way you did on the budget last week. And Representative Summerfield, let's start with you. You voted in favor of the budget. Why is this a good budget for your constituents in the 67th Assembly District?
Yes, last week we voted on Tuesday for this budget. A couple of the main things that I was very happy with on this budget was the increased funding for public education. With the budget I passed, last session. So in the last two sessions that I've been involved with, I've put in over $1.2 billion into K-12 education. This has been a good budget for addressing the rural needs, knowing with education, with mental health, increasing special ed funding by 22%. The education part was a very solid budget. I know last budget, we basically have the same proposal that Governor Evers at the time, which was Department of Public Instruction Superintendent, called this a kid-friendly budget. So education was one of the biggest concerns, and we addressed this in this budget. Also, the health care. The two biggest things that I really advocated, put budget motions in for, was for primary care workers and nursing homes reimbursements. Governor Evers did basically about 2% for both, and we did in this last budget a 7% increase for nursing homes and a 12% rate increase for personal care workers. I know I talked to a couple of my local nursing homes and they were ecstatic. They even talked to their accountant and they didn't think they've ever got this big of increase in funding. Saying that, we still know with the nursing home, with an aging population, we need to keep on making this a priority in the state. Transportation, I think that was one of the biggest debates going through how we're going to fund it. I know Governor Evers did the tax increase with the gas tax. The way we did in the budget was with fees and a few other things. In the end, we got to pretty close to the same numbers. The biggest thing was the 10% for local road aids. We got close to, I think, about $100 million in that. And I know that's one of the biggest concerns because we know down in Madison, Milwaukee, we've had a lot of the mega projects that have taken lots of our money. I think that they probably didn't need to be done, but however it seemed, I know up here in the Chippewa Valley, especially in our more rural townships, the cost of replacing the roads have gone up and the funding has not. So that's, I think, one of the biggest part of the transportation budget is that we got local road aid increases. And I guess finally, the other thing is the tax cut. We cut $500 million taxes. So I think overall this is a good budget. Governor Evers promoted a lot of spending. We knocked down the spending. We knocked down the bonding. I think we got good point in this budget that Governor Evers should sign because I think we met him on a lot of his goals in this budget we passed last week.
So, Senator Schachner, we move to you now. You voted against the budget that won by the narrowest of margins in the Senate, 17 to 16. Two Republicans voted against it. What were the biggest factors behind your no vote?
Well, I think the big thing is that this was really a missed opportunity to help Wisconsin thrive. The Medicaid expansion was the real kicker here, and the expansion would have by not taking it, it cost my district $107 million. And had we taken it, it would have opened up $1.6 billion in new federal funding. And as we look at a aging population where 10,000 people a day are turning 65, there is a human cost by not expanding Medicaid. When we look at education, there is some increased funding, which is great. However, the Republican budget cut $900 million from the K-12 budget, including $500 million from special education. Our kids, having worked in a school district, I know how hard it is to meet the needs. And our public education really works. The workers work really hard to meet the needs of our special ed students. And there's a human impact by making those cuts and not meeting those needs that are really meeting the needs of the students. Students who live in the school districts are the hearts of our community. Taxes for me, the GOP plan protects and gives tax breaks, gave $20 million to 11 people making over $30 million. For me, the only millionaires I know, and really it's a really good time to be a millionaire, but the millionaires I know are across the aisle from me in the legislature. There's really not a whole lot of millionaires in my district. So those tax breaks, though we agree that we need to have a tax break, our families need tax breaks. Clean water is a big deal in my district with the increase in nitrates and other contaminants that are going on. But it's a real big issue throughout the whole state with lead and everything. So not focusing on that, again, impacts children. And when we look at these different pieces of the budget, whether it's environmental, medical, education, they all directly impact children, and the children are our future. And we need to make sure that we have a budget that helps us, and it really trains our children to be our caretakers as we move forward. So I think, again, it was a real missed opportunity.
As promised, we'll dive into a number of those issues as the program continues. I do want to invite you to give us a call if you have a particular issue or concern you want to raise, 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615 here on the West Side on our legislative update. Senator Schachner, the governor now has the budget. He can sign it into law. He can veto the whole thing. He can veto portions of the bill. Do you have any sense as to what the governor plans to do? And did you make any suggestions to Governor Evers' office?
So, no, I respect the process of the electorate elected a governor to present, something different. So I eagerly look forward to seeing what he's going to do. As Democrats, really worked hard to reach across the aisle and have conversations in some of these very important topics. And we know with the Marquette poll that 70% of Wisconsinites wanted the Medicaid expansion. In my district, from people that called into my office, 89% of the callers wanted the Medicaid expansion. So I know that being the critical point of financial access to the budget, it's going to be interesting to see what the governor does, but he is the governor and he has the end say, and I look forward to hearing what it's going to be.
Representative Summerfield, I'm wondering, does the Republican caucus of the legislature have a strategy in place in the event of either a partial or a full veto by the governor? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we know going into this process with the most powerful veto pen, partial veto pen in the nation, that he's going to change stuff. I mean, that's why we work diligently on trying to make this budget a budget for all of Wisconsin. I know in our assembly, there's already 40,000 people throughout the state between listening sessions. surveys, contacts in the offices that this is a true people's budget for the state of Wisconsin. With you know, what the strategy is, I'm optimistic because I know I just saw a tweet today, Leading Age Wisconsin, which represent more than 200 nursing homes and facilities for developmentally disabled and assisted living, you know, are asking Governor Evers to sign it. I know the hospitals are on board with this budget. There's a lot of different groups that, especially in the healthcare, that see that this is a healthcare-friendly budget. So I know they're encouraging Governor Evers to sign this budget. If he does ultimately disregard the will of a lot of people in the state of Wisconsin and vetoes the whole thing, I know Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Fitzgerald is saying we probably would not take this up till middle of October. So the ball is in Governor Evers' court. I expect him hopefully to sign it. But of course, with his powerful veto, partial veto, that there will be changes to this budget. So we're looking to see what those changes will be.
And the ramification, of course, if he chooses to veto and there's a delay in override vote, is that the current, the past budget will remain in place until such time that action happens.
Right.
Senator Schachner, you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah. You know, when we look at the reimbursement rates, you know, Wisconsin has had more nursing homes close in the last 5 years than ever before. Not because there wasn't a need, but because of low reimbursement and we can't find the people to do the work. So we're at a crisis state right here, right now. And re-increasing reimbursement is helpful, but it is not the full answer. So we have to be, it's very good that we are increasing the reimbursement rate, but it should have been done collectively ongoing for years, and we wouldn't be sitting where we are right now.
We are talking with State Representative Rob Summerfield of Bloomer and State Senator Patty Schachner of Somerset. It's our legislative update on the West Side. You are invited to weigh in on the topic of the state budget or any other issue you want to bring up with our guests. Call 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. We'll tackle Medicaid next. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is the West Side of the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 11, it's Larry Mueller. We'll hear from Preston Cook, who has a 25,000-piece collection of art depicting the eagle as a symbol of America. Wow. He's written a book about the visual history of the American eagle, and we'll hear from him at 11 with Larry. Here on the West Side, we have our legislative update with State Representative Rob Summerfield and State Senator Patty Schachner. And I do want to get to that topic of Medicaid, but we have a caller on the line I'd like to bring in. It's Martha from Menominee. Martha, thanks for joining us on the West Side.
Thank you for having me. I am very interested in this process of these surveys that go out to the constituents in Dunn County. Mine was sent to me a while back in the spring, but these are used to assess how the constituents feel about the issues only. Mine was written by a fourth grader, it appears, who has no training in survey research. So how these surveys, this junk science, can be used to formulate public policy is a mystery to me. For instance, my survey says, one of the questions says, do I want to double or more than double Wisconsin's current minimum wage to $15, even if it could decrease the number of jobs and increase cost to consumers? Well, that's a myth. That has been debunked and disproven so many times. It's ridiculous. And yet that question shows up as though it's legitimate.
Martha, are the surveys coming from a politician or a party? From the legislators themselves.
They come from the legislators. The legislators get money from the state to put these surveys out. They are not written professionally, scientifically. There is no scientific survey research. If I had written this when I was a student in political science in my college class, I would have gotten an F. I would have gotten laughed out of the classroom. And yet, these legislators allow this to be done with taxpayer money based on junk science. It's crazy. This is ridiculous.
Thank you for calling, Martha. Senator Schachner, how much do you rely on surveys? Does your office send out surveys to your constituents, and how much do you rely on what you read there?
So we did set out a survey last year. You know, it's good to get the perspective of the constituents. And when you try to figure out which topics are the best topics, there is a process that we go through. We're all humans doing the best that we can, trying to figure out what information we need to help us make the best policy decisions. And, can we do better? And we all can do better. But I guess that's why elected officials have to really listen to folks and go, what is it you want from a survey? You know, maybe instead of partisan surveys, it should be bipartisan surveys. And then we could get some real answers.
Representative Summerfield, actually, Martha being from Menominee, she could be represented by either one of you, mm-hmm. since you have rural Menominee, mm-hmm. Rob Summerfield, and you have the city, Patty mm-hmm. Schachner. But so that's nice that we don't mm-hmm. have to identify, you know, and it may have been from a different legislator mm-hmm. within the district as well. But what are your thoughts on what Martha had to say? And do you take a lot of stock in mm-hmm. what you get from these surveys mm-hmm. that are sent out?
Yeah, I mean, we pick a certain amount of topics. I think I had 9 questions, if I recall. Last budget cycle, I think I did 10. It's a good way just to get more feeling. I know on mine, I put a comment section. So, I mean, if they don't like the questions, they're more than feel reach out to me, say, you know, not happy with them. A few people I did make a phone call, or they contacted the office, because with a one, line or 2-line question, there are a lot of times where if people like to reach out just to see, it's more in depth detail. You know, the $15 minimum wage, I think we could talk 20 minutes on that, on how I know it's having issues in Seattle, other communities that have went there with the job numbers. And, you know, that's part of the debates, is to start to open a conversation. And that's what I enjoy, this part of the job. If anybody calls my office and wants to talk, I'll talk to them, as long as they're respectful. And actually, pretty much everybody's always been respectful in the last 2.5 years of being in office. So that's part of the debate. If at the end of the day, we don't agree, which there's a lot of times where they're on certain issues, myself and constituent, we try to find some common ground, but on some issues, we have different philosophies and different feelings on how the state needs to be going on certain issues.
Martha drops off. You can join the call, 800-228-5615. Enjoy hearing from you. We promise we get to Medicaid. Let's do that now. One of the big differences between the budget Governor Evers proposed in February and the bill that's now in his hands relates to Medicaid. The governor wants the state to accept more federal money in order to expand Medicaid, saying it would save the state $320 million and bring more than $1 billion in additional federal money to the state to provide health care for an additional 82,000 Wisconsin residents. A lot of numbers there. But Representative Summerfield, your party pulled that provision mm-hmm. from the budget. Now, you chair the Assembly Committee on Medicaid Reform and Oversight. Mm-hmm. What's the logic in turning down this money?
Mm-hmm. First, with the Medicaid expansion, as you know in the title, it's Medicaid Oversight and Reform. So Joint Finance Committee is actually the ones make decision along with the caucus on the expansion. The issue with expansion is it's not working in a lot of states. Some states it's maybe seems a little more positive. I know, for instance, right now Rhode Island is looking at a 10% payroll tax on employers to cover their Medicaid expansion because enrollment has went up dramatically. Massachusetts still it's looking, at getting out of it or trying to roll back some of their benefits because 40% of their budget is now being eating up on Medicaid. What we did in the state of Wisconsin is we have no coverage or no gap in coverage, excuse me. So that means anybody can get coverage. If you're over 100% to 138%, you can go on the Affordable Care Exchange throughout the state and get insurance that way. The last budget, which I forgot to mention, we put in additional money for the healthcare stability plan, which in 2019 decreased healthcare cost by 4.2%. The overall Medicaid, we are spent roughly $1.4 billion, and the governor has about $1.6 billion. I really feel with the Medicaid portion of the budget, we actually made our priorities quite clear, especially with the nursing homes. Nursing homes, he was at 2% increase. We went to 7%. Same thing with personal care workers, 2% to 12% increase. I mean, so we had the money there to fund our priorities. At this time of record unemployment to grow government, because that's been one of the biggest concerns, people reaching out to me unhappy with this budget, is we keep on growing government. I think we increased this budget 5%. So we lived with our means in state of Wisconsin. We funded our priorities to make sure that we care for the most vulnerable in the state.
The Republican leadership in the legislature argues that rather than expanding Medicaid, let's have those additional 82,000 take advantage of the subsidies provided by the Affordable Care Act, as Representative Summerfield said, also known as Obamacare, to get private health insurance. Senator Schachner, why wouldn't Democrats support the use of Obamacare rather than expanding welfare?
Well, health care is not welfare, first and foremost. And when we talk to expanding Medicaid, it is a huge shift, but it's our tax dollars as Wisconsinites are going directly to Washington, D.C., and being dispersed to Rhode Island, to all 37 other states, and not coming back to us. And it's our tax dollars. We're not taking our tax dollars. That just seems so unreasonable. Why would we not accept the money that we're paying? So we are subsidizing other states' health insurance. Now, everyone is saying it's failing, but it's still working. Can there be positive things or some changes? Of course there can. But as we look at what's happening in our district and nursing homes, in just directly in regards to nursing homes, we had a meeting with a bunch of our nursing home administrators, and they said that most, not all, but most of their nurses' aides were on Badger Care. So there's the issue. We have people taking care of our most vulnerable people, and they're not getting a living wage, and they are getting state insurance. And it's like, let's just wrap our heads around that and think about our most valuable population that's growing, and they're not getting paid enough to make a living for them and their family. I got a letter directly from a local nurse's aide who was talking about being overworked and underpaid. And it's people like that, those voices from the Marys and the Craigs in our district that are working, doing this hard work, that cannot make a living. And there's a reason why our nursing homes are closing. There's a reason why we can't, you know, if we would have increased reimbursement collectively through the years, we would have been able to pay our staff to do the work. And when we talk about Medicaid expansion, again, we have a population that is growing by the day. And it's our senior population, and we have to make a conscious decision. Are we going to take care of them to the best of our ability, or just incremental? I personally think that we should be taking care of our seniors, who most of which spend down a lot of their assets. 70% of our people in nursing homes are on Medicaid. So we need to think about it.
Yeah, and actually that kind of, Senator Schachner, kind of laid into what I think the big picture with nursing homes is, you know, 30 years ago, nursing homes, I know my great-grandma, you know, stayed in a nursing home for 7 years because there's no assisted living facilities, no in-home health care. Now, nursing homes are more at the end of the life because we have the assisted living, the in-home nursing, and by that time, people have exhausted, you know, a lot of their funds through this, so you know, nursing homes have disproportionately have a lot of their staff on Medicaid. So that's a discussion I know I've had with fellow members in my caucus on, you know, this is 10 years down the road. We need to figure out how we are going to do this, because the whole model has changed. Because nursing homes used to be, you know, get a lot of private pay. Now nursing homes are pretty much are more and more heavily relying on the Medicaid.
Sounds to me like this is a point of agreement that, mm-hmm. that more help is needed in the nursing homes. Is this something that could be explored like in a separate bill mm-hmm. down the line, mm-hmm. do you think?
Well, you know, I think we have to. I mean, our constituents, the Wisconsinites, they've been asking, but soon they are going to be demanding people work across the aisle. And working across the aisle means meet in the middle. It doesn't mean come over to my side. It means meet in the middle. And we both are going to have to give up some things that we might think are part of our philosophies to meet in the middle to do what's best for people. And if we put people instead of profits, we will all win. And people are really what we're dealing with here. I spend a lot of time working in public service in EMS, working with people, and now as a death investigator. And it's tough out there. And people are demanding that we work together.
Because I don't want to leave this topic of Medicaid until Mary Ann from Chippewa Falls has an opportunity. We'll bring Mary Ann on now. Thanks for joining us on the West Side.
Hi. I had a couple of comments. The person who called earlier about the surveys, I really resent the fact that, again, my tax dollars are paying for the survey to go out. The questions on the last survey we received from Representative Sommerfeld, there were about three that were unbiased. The others were asking specifically for the answer that they wanted to hear, which was not the question should be worded so that it's neutral. My second comment is that Representative Sommerfeld mentioned some states where Medicaid is not working. There are a number of them where they are, so I wonder if he could give us the names of those, because I know there are several that have commented specifically about how much good it's doing. And again, the last comment that our taxpayers' dollars have gone into the Medicaid thing, and the dollars are going to other states.
Representative Sommerfeld.
Yeah, thanks, Mary Ann. I guess the questions, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, states specifically, I think New York has said, you know, it's somewhat positive. And I know there's study, I mean, that's the whole thing with this Medicaid expansion debate is, you know, down the road, maybe there be some wiggle room to go somewhere. But, you know, currently, right now, my job is what I've been doing is reading articles on both sides of the aisle. There's an article just came out from The Kroll, I think on Friday, I'd have to get the exact wording on it, saying that, you know, in Illinois that the insurance premiums actually went higher. So, you know, there's give and take on both sides of this debate. I think that's what one of the role is that we need to be as legislators making sure we are looking at both sides. You know, currently, Wisconsin already expanded medical assistance, you know, up to 100%. So, you know, we have taken those steps, and that's where part of this whole process is to make sure we see if whatever decision we do for, you know, this Medicaid, we do for the best for the state of Wisconsin.
Well, I think at the end of the day, listening to the people is really the important thing, but also acknowledging the fact that we are sending our tax dollars to Washington, D.C., and we're choosing not to take it back. It is a choice that legislators have made to give our tax dollars to other states and not take it back to help our own people who are struggling in our nursing homes with addiction and a plethora of other issues out there.
It's our legislative update on the West Side. You can join the conversation at 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. Senator Patty Shockner of Somerset, Representative Rob Sommerfeld of Bloomer are our guests today. Let's shift from Medicaid to another aspect of the budget that you both talked about in your initial comment when you talked about why you voted the way you did. Let's go to K-12 education. The budget includes $500 million increase in K-12 education, including the first increase for special education in more than 10 years. Senator Shockner, do you favor this infusion of funds into public education by this Republican budget?
I favor fully funding public education. Public education has not been a priority in the past, and I think it's somewhat ironic that the Republican budget, you know, yes, there is an increase, but it's not nearly what it needs to be. It does not help. It throws crumbs to education when we need fully funding. There has not been an administrator in my district that has said, just give me a little bit. They are struggling. They're making hard decisions, and special education, they're sucking money out of their general fund to put into special education to make up the difference for things that we're not funding. And it's really sad. And if we want to be competitive, families are looking at education, especially in my district, they're with open enrollment and access to Minnesota. They can live here, but they don't have to educate their children here. And Wisconsin has always been in the forefront of educating and their public education system. And it really breaks my heart to know that I have people in my district that choose to bring their children to another state. They will live here, but choose to go to another state to educate their children because they feel our education system is not good enough. And in my opinion, whatever we as legislators choose to do for education should be good enough for every child. And that's what public education is really to educate every child to the best of their ability. So fully funding public education is a priority. And what we have in front of us from the Republican budget is some crumbs that have been thrown our way to appease people, but it's not the best that we can do.
Representative Summerfield, Governor Evers asked for an increase in K-12 that is nearly three times what it got from the legislature in the budget. He was state superintendent of public instruction when he defeated incumbent Republican Governor Scott Walker, and he sees it as a referendum for more support, state support for public schools. Should the budget have gone further to help public schools?
I think where we got to was, you know, a very good point. I mean, if someone says a $500 million increase is crumbs, well, I guess a lot of my constituents don't see it that way either, because that's been one of the biggest concerns is, you know, the overall spending. So $500 million here, over $600 million last session, you know, over $1.2 billion this budget. It's been, you know, a very kid-friendly budget. I mean, that's what Governor Evers said when he was superintendent of public instructions. This is one that I talked to most of all my school districts, and I had people in the education world did say they knew what Governor Evers wasn't going to happen. He shot for the sky, shot so high that knew that, you know, this is just a good talking point saying we actually cut, which is ridiculous, is when you put additional $500 million and you get accused on the other side of the aisle of cutting. It's just ridiculous. And most people will see through it that we are funding our public education. I mean, my kids go to public schools. I'm a big, strong advocate for public schools. And this has been a very kid-friendly budget. School districts, I think, the ones I've talked to are happy with the increase that they have, and we have to keep on making sure that we continue in making K-12 education priority. Another issue is that we've had discussions is sometimes money isn't always the answer. We have to make sure to look for the reforms on how we can help the school districts educate. You know, are there some bureaucracy? Are there some red tape in it that, hey, maybe we need to look into to make sure that the kids are getting the best K-12 education for generations to come?
Well, when we give higher reimbursements to voucher schools than we do to the public education students, there obviously is an issue for-profit education. And the crumbs comment comes from a mother of a special needs child who actually had to quit her job as a professional to become a paraprofessional in a school district so that her child would have some actual she could feel safe that her child was getting everything that that child needed in school because of the complex special needs that they had. There are some very, very complex special needs children in our districts, and the complexities of their either injury or illness is that you need very highly qualified people, not only educating them, but also helping to care for them. And we as a system need to also look at, do we truly believe that a quality education is there for all children, and that means special ed? There is not a district in the state, and there is not a parent of a special needs child that will tell you that there is enough investment in special ed. So I think that is where the priority needs to be. Governor Evers tried to do that, and obviously taking care of our most vulnerable consistently through the budget process is not a goal.
Yeah, and just, you know, I just want to make sure that we did, you know, increase special education funding by 22% in this budget. Going forward, I know this is becoming more and more need that we need to, you know, keep on looking at to it. But yeah, we did do 22% more in special ed funding and look forward to keep on working on that situation.
And we're very appreciative of the 22%. Along with that, we also, your plan also gave $20 million to 11 people, making over $30 million a year. So again, being a millionaire is really a great thing right now. You get high-class funding with that in Wisconsin.
That's the voice of Patty Schachner, a Democrat whose 10th Senate district includes most of St. Croix and Polk counties and portions of Dunn, Pierce, and Burnett counties. Our other guest today, Rob Summerfield, a Republican who serves in the Assembly representing District 67, which includes most of Chippewa County and a portion of Dunn County. If you'd like to pose a question to our guest legislators, now would be a great time to call at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Chris from Chippewa Falls is on the line. We're going to talk about gerrymandering after the break. For now, it's a legislative update on the West Side. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is the Ideas Network. Join us tomorrow at this time on the Ideas Network for On Point, and Thursday at this time we'll feature an Independence Day edition of the Big River Radio Wave from the Big River Theater in Alma. Mac Cherry hosts, and WPR's own Al Ross serves as the stage announcer. There'll be music from John Smith, Dan Sobranek, Larry Dalton, and Ed Willett, along with comedian Amber Preston and poet Thomas R. Smith. All part of the show. That's the 4th of July at 10 a.m., the Big River Radio Wave on this station. We are talking legislative update. We've been talking about the budget, but we have a call from Chris in Chippewa Falls. He wants to talk about gerrymandering. Chris, welcome to the West Side.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on and taking my call. I would appreciate hearing from each of the candidates their view on the partisan gerrymandering process that we have in Wisconsin. Specifically, I'd like them to spend a few moments and reflect on the effect that it has had on driving districts into certain corners and how that then drives candidates to farther ends of the spectrum. And so while they can talk about working across the aisle and trying to come to these bipartisan agreements on very important legislation for our state, it doesn't really matter, because when it's time to go to the ballot box, they are not really truly being held accountable by the voters of their district. They've already chosen the voters of their district. And for Summerfield specifically, his victory in 2020 is all but set. The only way he loses is if he loses in a primary. So I'd like them to talk a little bit about what they think about the current state of gerrymandering in Wisconsin and where they see it going. Thank you.
So the governor did have, thank you, Chris. The governor did have a new nonpartisan redistricting commission that would reduce the power of lawmakers to draw their own district lines. It was eliminated by joint finance in the budget process. But Senator Schachner, isn't your own election in what is considered a red Senate district proof that we really don't need to fix redistricting, that the right candidate will win when they're the right candidate for that district?
Well, thank you for that. I look at gerrymandering you know, in today's environment, it's really become a really, really hot topic. And I must admit that I, as someone who has lived in a very Republican district for my whole life, I never, I voted every year, every time there was an election, and I never really even paid attention, and through my own ignorance, did not pay attention that much to gerrymandering till it really came into play. And then I started looking at maps and going, whoa, that's really weird. There's some really weird maps out there. So I think there is a better way to do things. I think that, you know, there's a big difference between a 6 and 8 week campaign and, you know, what we have in a normal cycle, which is 6 to 8 months. So that makes a big difference. The people of Wisconsin want something different, and the party in the majority right now has to decide if they're going to listen to the people and actually do something about it or not. And if they choose not to, you know, that says a lot about where they are in their security by not even contemplating something different. And for me, I think if we're really, I'm a really competitive person, and I wanted the game to be fair to begin with. And that, I think, says a lot about all of us and where we sit in the process of elections. So if we truly are looking at the pub being the voices and working for the public, whatever is the most fair is what we should all agree on works.
Representative Summerfield, the U.S. Supreme Court last week ruled on some redistricting or some gerrymandering cases that came before it that everybody pretty much agrees. The U.S. Supreme Court is saying it's in your constitution. Mm-hmm. The ruling party gets to draw the lines, and others shouldn't. The judicial branch shouldn't be interfering. But would it make some sense to have some sort of a committee to, you know, to talk about this so that there isn't that sort of polarization that we've been finding in the last 10 or 20 years in this state?
Yeah, and I guess, you know, with the whole redistricting, you know, argument on both sides, this last election, there's 17 assembly seats that Senator Baldwin won. So went for a Republican assembly person, but went for a Democrat senator. If the assembly would have ran good candidates, those 17 seats hypothetically flipped, Democrats have the majority in the assembly. I look at my seat. I mean, I think Governor Walker in 2012, it was, I think, Mitt Romney won 51.9. Last election, Governor Walker was around 56, 57. My personal, I got up to almost 62%. So I was about 6% higher, you know, than the top of the ticket. So a lot of these races, I know, especially in the assembly and even in the Senate, you know, people like to elect, you know, their local people, people from the area, people that they know, that have businesses that have connections with the community, that volunteer. I mean, I just looked at the southwestern part of the state, Representative Novak. You know, he's won 3 straight elections, I think, from 500 to 1,000 votes, and that's about a 41% seat for Republicans. So a lot of this depends on the candidate, you know, that knows the area and that's passionate. So, you know, saying, look, in this next redistricting with Governor Evers being there, unless the Democrats take control of both the Assembly and the Senate, we'll have split. Governor can veto it. They can work together, hopefully come up with a good map, or, you know, the courts will be drawing it, because this is what we've been doing for since 170 years since we've been in existence.
So I think what the constituents are saying is we want 21st century mapping, not the past. It seems like everything that looks towards the future into 21st century solutions, what I hear from my colleagues on the other side is we got to keep doing what has been done in the past. We can follow the Constitution and have 21st century visions. And I think that is where I think our main difference is, you know, when I look to the future, I really hope that the young people are set up with all the tools that they need to be successful as we move into the future.
One of the primary rationales used by the Republican leadership in the Joint Finance Committee to remove items from Governor Evers' original budget is that they weren't directly tied to the budget. They were more policy issues, and they could be brought forward as separate proposals. Yet the Republicans did add an item to the budget they passed last week that would limit the ability of local governments to oversee quarries. You have a number of sand mines in your district, Representative Summerfield. What kind of feedback are you getting to this idea from the local governments in the 67th district?
Yeah, I work closely with the Towns Association when this proposal was up there. The Towns Associations did sign off on the amendment. It doesn't affect sand mines. Because over 75% of the funding has to go for roads. And that's one of those that, with the aggregate, the towns, we have to figure out, you know, especially in the road funding, is the further the pits away from the roads, the costs go up. And that's what the whole part of this debate is with the aggregate, is seeing, okay, this is, you know, a situation we have. The further we get away, drives up the costs. Towns, counties, cities all wants more money for roads. So instead of just keep on writing blank checks with our tax dollars, you know, these reforms are into it. The towns had a lot of concerns with it. A few things were changing. So at the end of the day, they were okay with it. So in the end, it stayed in the budget, and we'll see what Governor Evers feels with that proposal.
We could go on three more hours talking about budget items. But I do want to get to a couple of items quickly, if we can, that were measures that you are sponsoring that are outside of the budget. First, Representative Summerfield, last week you introduced a piece of legislation that would create a tax advantage first-time homebuyer savings account. Can you, in a minute or so, explain the impetus behind this bill and how it would work?
Yeah, I mean, the more and more is to encourage, you know, saving for housing. So in turn, you have money, the 10%, 15% down. That kind of goes on to a big picture that I've been working on with other colleagues on how to address the housing shortages, the situation we have in our area. I know, especially in the Chippewa Valley, we don't have enough builders, land's up, everybody's working, so the demand is quite high, which is good for real estate, but we have to figure out how, if we're going to keep on growing this economy, which we are in our area, getting people here, we have to figure out how we can get housing there, affordable housing, workforce housing for the people. And this is one step. I'm hoping this fall we have a bunch more parts of this puzzle.
I think when we look at affordable housing, we have to look at what are the salaries that people are making. If you look at the United Way Alice reports, you will see that almost throughout the state of Wisconsin, for young families living in, and especially even in, within my district, they can't afford to live there. So with affordable housing and roads and transportation and all these put together, again, it's the young people that we need to start looking at. What do you need to be successful in the state of Wisconsin? And it's hard to put money aside for a house when you're paying house payments on your student loans.
Senator Schachner, this spring you introduced a bill to change the way sexual assault kits are handled. Can you explain why this bill is needed and what would change if it's enacted?
Well, at time is of the essence is really the big thing. Sexual assault, when you talk about it, can be partners. It can be domestic violence. There's a lot of different things that happen, and there's a lot of nuance in sexual assault and sexual violence that goes on. And some were prioritized primarily based on whether or not charges were held or not. And this helps with the process of taking care of these kits and making sure that we have all the information that we need in a timely basis.
Well, very well. We've got just a bit of time left, and I'm going to ask you to be prognosticators now. Senator Schachner, what do you think the governor does with the budget?
As I said earlier, I don't know exactly what's going on and where he's going to sit. I'm hopeful that we will come back with something. I'm pretty sure it's not going to be what was put in front of him, but it's hopefully something we can work with and something that we can start building on to really make Wisconsin the place we all want and think it is.
Representative Summerfield, what do you expect?
Yeah, I think he's going to see how, you know, there's so many good things in this budget. Of course, mentioned before, he'll line item veto it. But I don't think it's good for the state of Wisconsin for him to veto the whole thing, because it's never been done in the history of the state. So I would expect, you know, a bunch of line item vetoes, and hopefully the core of this great budget that we sent to him gets signed.
A great conversation. Senator Patty Shockner, Representative Rob Summerfield, great to have you with us today. Hope to have you back soon.
Certainly. Thank you for having us.
Thank you much.
Catherine Thomas produced this hour with the help of Clara Neipert. Thanks to Allison Schulze for publicity and Mort Cypress for on-air production. Next week at this time, we focus on beekeeping. We talk about the beekeeping activity in western Wisconsin, including urban beekeeping. And we'll talk about a new collaboration between the beekeeping groups and XL Energy to improve life for pollinators in our region. Join us next week. That's at 10 o'clock here on the West Side. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and you've been tuned to the West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.